It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy and Alex are here, and boy, we're getting close. The Goldmaster has shipped of Mountain Lion. We'll take a look at the new features you can expect and how soon you can expect them. We'll also talk a little bit about new iOS features and the fact that Samsung just isn't cool enough to steal the iPad design. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 307, recorded July 10th, 2012. You're not cool enough. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, visit Squarespace.com and use the offer code MacBreak7. And don't forget to get your free domain registration with annual plan subscriptions. And by Ford, featuring the My Ford Mobile smartphone app for electric vehicles. The My Ford Mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun and efficient. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at Ford.com/technology. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that I did a little motorboat thing there.
That was great.
the show that covers everything you need to know about Macintosh and iOS. Andy Inatko is here from the Chicago Sun-Times and the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth. Hello, Mr. Inatko.
Hello, Leo. Hello.
As always, regaling us with ukulele while we procrastinated. that is a good procrastination instrument.
The reason why I took up the ukulele was because there was this is back during Mac OS 9 days where something would happen and you'd have to restart. And so I'd find myself with all these like 6-minute intervals with just waiting for the machine to restart.
Perfect.
And so I realized that, gee, if I put a device on the desk in that spot right there so that every time my computer lets me down, I can focus on developing a skill involving that item. It was either knitting or that or, you know, or actual like or balancing my checkbook.
Knitting, no, you would have had some socks. You would have had something as a result.
Mac, we're talking about Mac OS 9. I would have had a Doctor Who scarf within 2 months.
But you have learned something gainful, a ukulele. I always wish I played an instrument. Alex, do you play an instrument? Alex Lindsay is also here for the Pixel Core.
Yeah, my instrument like that is the Imbira. It's a thumb piano from
I've heard
Africa.
You actually play quite well.
That's because I have a lot of time.
Free time.
On my computer, waiting for it to start, waiting for it to do something.
God bless it. So, we're getting close. Apple, this is Mac Rumors headline. I'm not sure I really like this. Apple seeds Mountain Lion. I don't like it. The Golden Master has gone to developers. Apple gives this is CNET's headline. Apple gives developers fully baked Mountain Lion. I don't like that much either. Sounds like animal cruelty is involved.
I don't know. I wonder how Mountain Lion tastes. Probably a little between cougar and cougar and mountain lion. I guess it's the same thing.
Maybe it tastes naughty.
This is the 8th iteration of OS 10. OS 10, 10.8, or in Paul Thurrott's words, the Ocho.
Actually, that would be 9.
9?
There's 10.0, remember.
Oh, you're good. Was there a 10.0? Of course there was. Yes. You're good.
That was my inner Sheldon.
That was very good.
Excuse me, there were 9 editions.
If you start with 0, 10.8 would be 9.
So does that put us 2 years off between to OS 11?
I don't know. Otherwise, what do they do when they get to 10.10?
When they go to iOS 6.
Or 1.0.1.0. Apple first debuted the software in late February with a preview release. It has followed up with a handful of beta versions, and each going to developers. And they say this one is the golden master. Can anybody, you guys have a long experience with OS 10 and Apple. Have there ever been any changes after the gold master is shipped? Is that where there? I guess what you'd call that is a showstopper, a bug where it's so bad you have to actually.
It's usually a big deal because otherwise you'll just get an incremental, you know, they'll release it and then a week later or 2 days later they'll release an update.
Right.
I seem to remember GM2. I could be wrong though.
There have been some GM2s.
It would have been a while ago.
Yeah.
Tiger, I think, had a GM2.
So it's safe to say we're getting close. They said July could surprise everybody. One thought is, you know, they have their earnings call July 24th.
And last time they surprised everybody on their earnings call saying, oh, Lion will be out tomorrow. So maybe they'll do the same thing today or the 24th, I guess.
Well, I guess. And they're also taking apps for the store. So it looks like they must be getting close.
And they're asking developers to submit. It will be good news. $20 update available for anybody, free for anybody who just purchased a Mac. $20 if you didn't. And that's for every Mac in your ownership. However, compatibility might be an issue for you because a lot of even just a few year old machines are not compatible. Let me just see if I could pull up Apple's. I'll read you Apple's description of what machines are compatible. Well, I'll read it from somebody else.
Well, they had a problem with this in the last version, right? Where you could update something with Lion and it didn't actually, you know, work.
Right, or it was too slow, or here, OS 10, 10.8. Actually, this is from Hard Mac. This would be better. This is a list of, Hard Mac's pretty good on hardware. List of Mountain Lion compatible Macs is at hardmac.com. But see, I can't read this. But if you have a Core 2 Duo mid-2007 or later MacBook Pro, if you have a MacBook Core 2 Duo unibody late 2008, you have a 2008, late 2008 MacBook Air, no previous Airs, 2009 Mac Mini, early 2009. Basically, you need Core 2 Duo or later.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The 2008 Mac Pro, 64-bit EFI, or the first aluminum iMac. Wow, the iMacs are pretty compatible going back way back to 2007. And on Xserve, you need a Xeon Nehalem. And that is from the Mountain Lion installer. That's what the installer is actually looking for.
And then if you get excited, I mean, a lot of times these installers have these little checks, and there's ways to hack them so that they'll just go on to older things.
But you may not want to, or
exactly,
would you?
You might not want to. I mean, it may be what they're, of course, what Apple's doing is they are making sure that most people will have a good experience. And so they're saying you shouldn't install it on here. You should just stick with what you have if you don't,
right.
If you don't have that. But there are ways typically to hack OSs onto. Because it's just a check, and then you just get past the check.
Now, I think if you have those machines, you probably have the specs needed. You need 2 gigs of RAM. Everybody's got that.
Mm-hmm.
The older Airs, no, they all shipped with 2 gigs. 8 gigs of available space, not a lot.
The funny thing is, I think if you're the kind of person that could hack the OS to go into an older machine, you probably don't have an older machine.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, if you have an older machine, you're probably beyond being convinced that you need a new operating system anyway. It's surprising to see how many machines are out there running 10.4, and then when you tell them, well, here's why you can't get onto the Wi-Fi network because your operating system does not support Wi-Fi,
and then get mad then. Right. Yeah.
Clinton was still in office when this thing was sold. It might be time to go back. Now, since the last time you bought a Mac, we have these things called Apple stores, and they're really pretty. You're going to dig them a lot. you compare this because Windows is also going through their own like little revolution for 2012 with Windows 8. And I keep seeing people sort of boasting about how, I tried to install like the pre-release version of it on a Dell Latitude from 10 years ago, and it just works just fine. And you keep wondering yourself, you keep asking yourself, what do you have to do to an operating system so that you could still run it on a Pentium on a Pentium processor that's like 8 generations out of date? But still, it's nice that it works fine on machines that are like 3 or 4 or 5 years old. A lot because there's going to be every time that Apple does another incremental release, it's not even so much a case of hey, if you've got a 2 or 3 year old machine, you'll find that it will run a little bit faster, and you'll really love the new drop down menu system. A lot of it is no, there are brand new APIs that only work with 10.8, and the software that you'll be buying for the next 2 or 3 years will only run on 10.8. If you're still running 10.5, you lose access to a large number of apps. 10.6, 10.7, each one leaves behind another huge swath of the App Store library. So it really is almost an upgrade or die situation with Apple's attitude towards these annual updates.
I want to take a break. And when we come back, let's talk about what's new in Mountain Lion. How about that? And I think that we're going to probably see it in the next few weeks. So this is going to be something. And I would guess if you have compatibility, neither of you have a compelling reason for not upgrading, right? There's no, it's not going to break anything.
Well, it's probably going to break some stuff for the first couple months.
I upgrade very slowly. Usually there's one.
Because you're in production machines.
I mean, it just, very slowly, very slowly. You don't, there's no reason to update immediately.
You know, it's so interesting. On the Windows side, nobody upgrades. You buy a new machine. It's very rare that people buy a operating system upgrade. On the Mac side, I don't know what the stats are, but it's like 80 or 90%. People just upgrade.
Just all I got to say, my experience with Lion is if you're one step ahead, you're a leader. If you're two steps ahead, you're a martyr. And
remember, you don't have to outrun the Lion. You just have to run the next guy.
I just like to watch everyone get, because there's all these bugs. Lion came out and there was all this.
Was it really bad?
I don't remember. It was bad. And so there was all this stuff that wasn't working. And so we hung out for a little while. And even the very last machine that I upgraded, I talked about it last week, trashed my RAID.
Really? So, oh, that's right. Yeah.
Fixed it by going back to Mountain Lion. So now it's back in Mountain Lion. It's a big mess. But anyway, so it's, I wouldn't say that, I would, if it would, I'm not going to upgrade immediately. That's all I got to say. I mean, I'll upgrade one machine so we can talk about it on the show, but the rest of our machines will slowly get upgraded over the next 6 months.
And I, on the other hand, will upgrade every machine I have immediately, regardless, heedless of any complaints.
Everybody here is like, oh, no.
I don't care.
It'll work great for almost everybody, but there's always going to be that 5% where you have this one app that needs to run, but it won't run. Or you have this one peripheral that's not even terribly exotic, but the company has fallen a little bit behind in driver technology, and it causes that to fail. Which is why it's usually smart to at least wait a couple of weeks just to see if there are any big showstoppers that appear in the news about things that affect a large swath of people, because those can definitely happen. I guess the upside is that why do you necessarily need it to have it on the day of release? It's not as though the 103rd caller gets free Aerosmith tickets or something for being the 103rd person upgrade. It's not a radio contest.
You guys have to hand in your cards as pundits. If it's the reason you know that it's broken is because people like me immediately download it.
One of my computers. I'm gonna upgrade immediately.
You're gonna do it, right? Because that's your job.
Okay, go. One computer here in the studio. I got two computers, two Macs in the living room. Back in the office, I've got three Macs, and I've got my real computer upstairs on the nightstand in the bedroom because I had to let it go.
How many of those are you going to upgrade?
I'll be upgrading two of those immediately. The last one to go is always that MacBook that I run my entire life on. Uh-huh. If I had like a really huge like book project going on, if there was like a really big project a contract that's going to be due in like 6 weeks, and there is no excuse for it not being in on time, I wouldn't let a new operating system anywhere near it.
Well, I just like living on the bleeding edge.
Well, also you get it's great TV
if this
turns into like a routine problem on any enterprise ship computer, you know, where it's like, oh, I'm sorry, that flash drive is incompatible with this port, and it results in a shower of sparks and crewmen being thrown across the room. That's a great show. That you want to have paper. I'm like, that's great.
Wait a minute, let me check. What is the 24th? That's a Tuesday, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it's two weeks from now. So if it is that'd be the 25th though. If it comes out the day after the analyst call, I don't care. I'm going on air. I'm going to install it live on the air whenever it's available.
Now. There's a developer version. Just install it.
No. See, that's the thing. I don't do the developer version.
Okay.
I like to be surprised.
Okay.
There you go. That's my whole point is I don't do the developer version, but the minute the consumer version's available, I'm there. As soon as it's released. I even say that. People send me, prospective email saying, would you like to look at our software before it comes out? I say, no, but the minute it comes out, send it to me and I'll take a look at it. I don't want to see pre-release software because that's not what consumers are using. I want to see the real deal. But I will use it right away. And you know what? You can watch me. And if I'm screaming and yelling, don't do it. It's very simple. That's why I do that. It's my job. Here, I'll tell you what. There's no pain. Oh, I'm excited, though. There is an upgrade. And people have been waiting for Squarespace 6 for a long time. It's out. Still in beta, I think, but you can do it now. Go to squarespace.com. Click the try it free button. I guess you don't get the choice of Squarespace 6 yet. I'm confused. My site is on Squarespace 6. I just think Squarespace is so great. So here's what the deal is. Squarespace is hosting plus software for your website, whether it's a blog, a photo gallery, a portfolio, e-commerce, whatever it is you're doing. And you can see the broad variety of things that people are doing if you go to the examples page at squarespace.com. I'll tell you, it's a lot of artists, a lot of photographers, a lot of people with great aesthetics. Why?
Our sites are all in it.
Because it's gorgeous. And because no two Squarespace sites look alike. And that's really important. You know, it's not a cookie cutter thing. They have these great templates. I don't even know what I'm looking at. It's the Strobist and Numbnuts, Hobby and McNally. Wow, that's cool. They're doing a tour. So they chose Squarespace. Look at these guys. They're some of the best photographers out there. So here's the deal. Squarespace.com. Click the green try it free button. If you want, look at the examples first. Take the tour. They've got a great online tour on the site. Build your site, choose your style, and then relax, they say. I love that. The best hosting, the best designs, 85-plus professionally designed templates, some brand new ones too. The CSS editor, if you're an expert, but you don't need to be because it's all point and click.
And one of the big things for us is that a lot of people in the company can update it.
Right.
Can fix things, change things, add pages, customize pages, build them.
Without having the big developer skills.
There's no coding required. Right. Everything's WYSIWYG.
But you can have the coder if you have like the person in your company who's really good at that. That person can set it up and then let the rest of them tweak it.
And we have a mixture of all of that between DB Garage and Pixel Core, which are all Squarespace pages. Yeah.
And you can have multiple users on the there's two plans. I'll show you the pricing in a second. But on the full plan, you can have as many editors as you want. So you can say, you can do this. There's permissions. You can do this, but you can't do that. Complete importing from your existing blog or a site, WordPress blogger, movable type, typepad, and exporting out if you want to go back. Now, here's the pricing. $8 a month when you pay for a year is the basic. 20 pages, a half a terabyte a month of bandwidth, 2 gigs of storage. That's fine. For a basic site, that's fine. Although, for many people, you're going to want to do the $16 a month. That's
when you
buy a
year. I don't even know how they make that work.
I know. It's unlimited pages, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage. If this had been around when we started Twit, I wouldn't have worried about bandwidth deals. This is a great deal. And I'm going to make it even better because if you use the offer code MacBreak7 when you buy it, you don't have to do anything to try it. But if you decide to buy, you get 10% off your first purchase, whether it's a month or a year. But 10% off the yearly plan is a significant savings. So I would do it. That's MacBreak7. They also, when you buy a yearly plan, will automatically handle a custom domain name. They hook it all up. You know, sometimes that can be a little fiddly. They do it all for you. Squarespace.com. Try it today. I think you'll like it. And if you decide to buy MacBreak 7. So, new features in Mountain Lion. Just a quick tour, just because it's been a while since we've looked at this. I'm looking at Apple's site, iCloud. Well, that's not new.
Well, it's new and it's a big deal for
documents.
For the Mac.
Documents.
Documents in the cloud. The ability to just walk away from your Mac in your office, pick up your iPad, and I can pick up an iWork right where you left off. That's a huge deal. This really is the release that it's kind of the put up or shut up moment for iCloud, where we've been kind of forgiving that iCloud works great in some things, doesn't work so great in other things. As soon as Mountain Lion gets released, there's a period that begins with the release of Mountain Lion and probably ends maybe 8 weeks after the release of iOS 6, that says that if iCloud isn't feature complete and reliable by the end of that, we have to start wondering, is this ever going to really work out? But yeah, Documents in the cloud is really going to sell the idea of here's why you want to buy it. Here's one of the many reasons why you want to buy an iPad and not something else.
Yeah. Now, that's for iWork only, or is it?
Well, I'm sorry, I misspoke. It's any third-party app can support iCloud.
Okay.
iWork is almost certainly going to be the first suite of apps that really does that great right out of the box. A lot of developers are having problems figuring out how to support iCloud properly. It's a subtle thing to grasp, because you realize that when you think about how iCloud works, it's all about saying that there is a central truth to this piece of data that's being hosted by iCloud. And when there's a discrepancy between two copies of that same document on multiple devices, there has to be a battle to figure out which one of it works. And so you extrapolate that into, well, what happens when my iPad is using a word processor that supports, let's say, version 1.31 of this document type. My desktop just got an update that now creates a different, slightly different version, 1.32 of the file format. And now you have not only two different files, but also two different data structures. How do you figure that stuff out? Also, how do you deal with an app that this will work great. iCloud is absolutely perfect for things like contacts and appointments and notes, little bits of information. But what happens when you have a file that's actually 300 or 400 megabytes long? You have a report that's just huge, monumental, or you have a database that's going to be syncing through this sort of way. So we have to figure out exactly how well these things are going to work. We talked about how you get a little bit worried about adopting a new operating system right out of the box on first day. iCloud apps are also going to be that sort of thing where you want to be a little bit careful before using the cloud features until you know that this specific developer for this specific product has worked out every single kink that's possible. Because I've been talking to a lot of developers, and it's not really a click one button and make iCloud work. It really is a start really, really early, figure out every single way that this app can screw up with syncing, and make sure that you've taken care of those exceptions.
But implemented properly, this could be huge.
Right, exactly. I mean, it works. I use iCloud all the time on my iPad stuff. What I'm really looking forward to is the day when I don't have to use Dropbox.
Yeah.
Right now, I mean, the great
thing is that's what Dropbox, this basically replaces.
Yes, I mean, because Dropbox's strength is that you do have to think about how you use it, but you feel as though you're completely in control of it, and it almost never fails. I do have to remember to keep my documents inside my Dropbox folder, and then when I want to actually use this Pages document in the iOS version of Pages, I then have to use the Dropbox app in order to get that out of my synced folder and into iWorks Pages workspace. But it does work. So the idea is that when iCloud is up and working, and if I'm using Pages on the Mac and Pages on iOS, I don't have to even do anything. The fact that I'm using an an iCloud Studly desktop app means that it's available to me everywhere. So no intermediate, nothing to do, nothing to maintain, nothing to think about. It's just there.
And it seems minor compared to that, but also reminders and notes will now be synced to the desktop.
Right.
And actually, I think that could be very useful. I use reminders for my shopping list. I use reminders for a lot of things. That could be pretty useful. But you need to make this work sensibly. You need an iPhone or you need an iOS device as well.
Yeah, well, obviously, you need to have lots of different devices going.
Right.
But, I mean, you sort of realize I was sort of motivated to start playing back previous keynotes. And you listen to the tone that Apple used to use in the keynotes when talking about iCloud, in which they were really talking about it as though it were the new iPad, as though it were the new iPhone. And in all the months since then, you come to appreciate that, yeah, Apple truly is investing a lot of their future in iCloud. They feel as though this is the service, this is the glue, that even if a user doesn't necessarily know that iCloud exists, it's the reason why they think that the combination of a Macintosh, not Windows, and an iPad, not an Android tablet, and an iPhone and not a Windows phone machine is the absolute killer triple play combination in tech.
Well, it has to be. I mean, you have to... I don't know. I think iCloud isn't really a choice. You have to be able to connect to all these devices and it's still not seamless enough, in my opinion. I mean, we really want to get rid of, I mean, have to admit, we don't, Google Docs drives us a little crazy, but the fact that all of us can work on it together.
And that's one thing, iCloud will not be cross-platform, right?
Yep. I don't really care about cross-platform,
a lot of people do. All right, maybe nobody in your enterprise uses Windows, but that is something to point out, is that Google Docs does go across platform.
Right.
Anybody with a browser.
But I have to admit that is the perfect example of the lowest common denominator. So it's cross-platform, and it's just so hard to use. I mean, try building a spreadsheet on
Google Docs.
Well,
that's the price you pay, right? Cross-platform means you can't. Yeah, you can't just, be, you know, tweaked for the UI.
But we use it all the time. Like, we complain about it all the time.
Right.
But we use it all the time
because
there's nothing
here.
Else we can use. Yeah, absolutely.
We've been looking for something better. And I think we're all Mac. But, I mean, business uses Windows. I guess we have to be cross-platform. Because some of our hosts, we get this show about Windows. I don't know how that happened. But SkyDrive, Microsoft solution, is a little more cross-platform. There are SkyDrive clients you can sync on a Mac. Yeah. I wonder if Apple will ever offer anything for Windows users,
or just a web way to input.
Well,
web edit.
We can't dive into it. I'd be surprised if Apple doesn't at least open up an API so that third parties can write Windows apps that access documents in the cloud. I would be, I don't know how Apple can make iCloud work that way unless they at least allow even third-party Mac OS apps to simply say, we are going, here's an app that I have now built and I'm selling for $5 at the App Store that turns iCloud into, that allows me to have a flash drive of sorts, allows me to have a Dropbox folder hosted with an iCloud so that I can move documents into and out of it very, very easily and make them visible to Windows people and other people.
Dropbox is cross-platform, too. I mean, I think maybe in a way Dropbox is the real competition here.
Yeah.
Especially on iOS, case, yeah, since almost every app works with...
It's the killer bee. And now yeah. they just doubled storage.
Yeah.
So now you get 100 megabytes for next to nothing.
Well, no, Dropbox is expensive. It's not next to nothing. It's $100 a year, isn't it, for 100 megabytes? I can't remember what the pricing is. It's not completely cheap. And I think, well, it is cheaper than iCloud. What is iCloud storage? It's not. It's pretty expensive compared to that.
I think it isn't.
I'm going to have to look up Dropbox pricing because we just got doubled. I have 100 gigs of Dropbox.
Yes, I'm sorry. I said megabytes.
Gigabytes.
The problem is like I write so much about like especially when I'm writing about like phones where I'll spend two paragraphs talking about how megapixels the camera is and then the first line of the next sentence is about storage and I'm not really that stupid. I'm stupid, but I'm not that stupid.
No, you know what you're talking. Let's see. Here's Dropbox pricing. Let's see. It's $99 a year. $100 a year for 50 gigs, $200 a year for 100 gigs. Although they're going to double that right now. Or yeah. Is that the doubled?
I think that's the doubled.
That's the doubled. And then let's see the pricing for storage for iCloud. It's more than that. I'm going to have to look at my iPad. $20 for 10 gigabytes, $40 for 20. It's the same price, $100 for 50. It's the same price as Dropbox. So
probably not by accident.
Probably that's not an accident. Notification Center. Now, Growl's got to be a little upset, but I think this is going to be a little more integrated than Growl and probably a little bit more useful. It's directly from iOS, which is directly from Android, the idea that something slides in on the right side of your screen, letting you know you've got email, a message, a software update, a calendar alert. It's a center so that other apps can hook into it. I like that. I use Growl a lot. This seems like it'll be a little bit more integrated than Growl, so this will be nice. Although it's very Growlish. Power Nap. If you have a MacBook Air late model or a Retina, when your Mac go to sleep, it still gets things done.
I don't know if I hope that's only when it's plugged in, because I mean one of the problems that I have is that an iPhone right now it's doing a lot of stuff in the background.
Yeah, well, and I'm noticing that it says when your Mac is connected to a powered source.
Okay,
so you're okay.
Yeah. So
updates, makes backups with Time Machine, downloads email, and while all that updating is going on, the system sounds are silent, and no lights or fans come on, so nothing disturbs you. You know, I noticed on the Retina, there's none of that pulsing light thing. There's no light anymore.
Not even a battery status light.
Nothing.
I have to admit that was kind of an important feature for me to know what it's thinking. Well, like when the screen doesn't come on, when it opens up, I want to know whether that light's going or not.
Right. Ooh, nothing now. And that's probably because of power nap.
I'm finally going to get mine.
You're going to get the Retina? You ordered it.
I got the mail. I ordered it 1 minute after they put it on.
Poor guy. But you got the top of the line BTO, built to order.
It's gonna be cool.
Dictation. Listen, I'm excited about dictation. I use dictation on iOS a lot.
I use Dragon tons.
So well, this is Dragon, right?
I'll be interested to see how it compares to Dragon.
It's Nuance. I'm pretty sure they're using. I know they're using.
I think it's Nuance. The question is, are they going to have all the features that Dragon has? I mean, you know, that's the question: is what's built in?
Dragon has nice correction features.
There's a lot of good correction features. There's a lot of tools that you have there where you can tell it to scratch that or do a variety of different things. And it'll be interesting to see how much of that ends up in the OS version, because I'm going to guess that it's a very, very great basic version of Dragon, but not the full-featured Dragon. So if you're really using it like I do, you'll still want to use Dragon.
I would guess that it would be identical to what we have on iOS.
Yeah. Right, which is very basic.
But gets the job done.
For most people, yep.
Share from everywhere. Facebook, Twitter, Flickr, and Vimeo. Anything. This is the iOSification.
But not G+.
Desktop. But not
exactly. But I wouldn't worry about it. YouTube
can't share to Google Plus. Oh,
not that I'm bitter.
There's a new Google Plus client for the.
It's awesome. Have you seen it?
I'm going to check it. Somebody just mentioned it.
Don't talk about it.
Is it going to be here? Huh?
Well, you can talk about it. I'll pick something else. That's the old one.
Yeah. So, I'll have to update. No, don't show me. We'll get there. Facebook is integrated in. You can status update from anywhere. Ooh. Twitter. AirPlay. Now, this I like.
Yeah.
This I like. Now, isn't it Rogue Amiga who makes AirFoil, which lets you play any audio, but AirPlay will actually mirror your video. Anything that's on... Oh, this is so cool.
Yeah, there was like an AirParrot or something like that that was out. I was like, yeah.
So if you have an app, you need the new Apple TV, right? Mm-hmm. And then I guess you'll just be able to say, it's on my screen. Now I want to see it on the big screen. That is so cool. I've been doing that on the iPad. It's great.
And if you're looking at what you want to put in your conference room...
Mm, oh, yeah.
Mm, mm. That's all I got to say. If you're Mac-based, you know, you now... I mean, you can have all the little cables and all the little dongles
so
and everything
better.
Else, but...
Well, you've seen the Samsung ad, the dongle ad.
I saw the dongle ad.
I'll play that in a second. See, Samsung has to jump on these features because an iOS 6, all of that stuff's going to be... It's like you got to advertise fast because it's all going to be there in iOS 6 anyway.
Right.
And Mountain Lion.
The whole point is it's going to work so much better. I mean, Samsung, I mean, they make jillions and jillions of TV sets, so they know how to support, like, our existing standards for connecting wirelessly to TVs and browsing content. But whereas this is truly click this one familiar button that will be everywhere in the interface to either use the TV as a second display or mirror, and it simply works, I have to dig through documentation to get it to work on the Samsung Galaxy S3. So it's not just the fact that it does it, it's the fact that it's going to do it so well. And it's also given me a reason why I think I'm going to have to buy myself another Apple TV to travel with as a presentation tool.
Ooh, very good point.
Because if it means that I can present from anywhere in the room just by plugging this directly into the projector, but also have Apple TV in my hotel room for the week.
Yeah,
that's a good deal for me.
That's an excellent point. I mean, it's small enough; it'd be easy to carry that around.
Yeah.
The new Apple TV or either Apple TV?
Oh, I don't know. I'm making that up.
I'll test it. I have.
It's easy to set up with Apple TV. I guess it's any Apple TV. AirPlay mirroring anything that's on your Mac, except, and I know this is the case on the iPad, and I'm guessing it'll be the case on the desktop, Hulu, HBO Go. There are apps on the iPad that say, sorry, we don't share.
But that's the choice of developers. That's not the choice
of
that limitation of the iOS.
No, I understand. But Apple did give them that choice. I guess you have to. Game Center, do you care? I don't care. Anybody care?
No.
I know people who care because believe me that they want their high scores to be high frickin' scores. they want all the equity that they build up, not just their scores, but also the social connections they've made over the past.
Well, that's kind of an issue though, isn't it? Because Does it distinguish between desktop Angry Birds and iOS Angry Birds?
Well, the app can make that choice.
It should, because if you have, you know, a desktop, you got a bigger screen, you got better controls. I think it shouldn't be the same.
Yeah. And I mean, gaming is such a big part of what Apple's doing nowadays. When going back to AirPlay, I think that there are a million reasons why it's a great idea, but you also have to imagine that it also gives Mac gaming additional presence inside the living room. The big screen with a good not only the big screen with the great speakers, but the sofa where you can have two or three people sitting and actually contributing at the exact same time.
Right. Gatekeeper. This is huge. I think this is maybe the most important feature of Mountain Lion. Big security update, including. Something that prevents you from downloading third-party apps if you want. You could turn this on for your kids.
Well, this is also for admins at a school or at a corporation of being able to just lock down the machines, which is something they haven't been able to do, which is one of the reasons they don't like.
So there's three levels of security. You can set it so that only Mac App Store apps are available. Mm-hmm. That's the highest level security. The intermediate step is Mac App Store plus developers who have signed certificates. Meaning that you know who they are, which presumably somebody doing malware is not going to take the time to get, or the highest level. And I'm glad they still include this anywhere you want. You can still download from any website. Doesn't matter. So those are the three different settings.
Yeah.
And I think that's good.
The key is if you're installing it for your parents, you just turn it on.
You know, I'm going to turn it on App Store until
App Store only, and then you can call me if you need me to install something other than that.
I'm doing this Mac Mania cruise in November. I'm going to do the lecture on Mountain Lion. I dibsed it, And one of the things I'm going to talk a lot about is when it's good to download an app from the App Store, but when you might want to download the app from the website. And then what to do if you are downloading it from the website. There are apps. You know, Alfred is a good example. I love Alfred. You know, that's the one where it's like it's the new Quicksilver where you hit a keystroke and you type in the first few letters. Alfred has to offer a different version on the web than they offer on the App Store. And if you want the version of Alfred that has the Power Pack, which gives you a lot of additional features, you have to you can't use the App Store version. It is, Apple won't let you.
That's probably about sandboxing.
Yeah, it probably has to do with sandboxing. Yep. So,
I'll tell you that brings up. I want to preface this by saying I'm not worried about Gatekeeper, but over the past couple of years, every time Apple does something that fundamentally changes the way that users interact with third-party software, particularly anything that changes the status of third-party software, I at least worry that this could be used as another weapon in the next year or two. It's sort of like if on a spaceship when they suddenly, you know, we're being attacked by aliens, we suddenly said, you know what, everybody who doesn't know how to pilot the spaceship and who failed the fitness test, we're not kicking off. No. We want everybody on board the ship. We're just putting you all in the same quarters outside. I mean, it's almost
with the telephone sanitizers. We're going to put you all together.
We're giving you your own space aft of the engine so that if we get hit there, we're not going to care if we lose you. So in a sense, Gatekeeper is a way to easily segregate all the apps that Apple doesn't have control over into one little bundle. And so, again, I'm not saying this is any plan. I'm not saying that I'm actively worried about this, but I'm aware that suddenly there is a very, very easy, fine-grained way for Apple to decide, give me a list of every app on this device that we don't have any control over and let us treat this differently or not support it in a future release. So
it makes me – you're right. I agree with you. And, you know, I'm the one who said when they started the App Store, uh-oh. And so, for instance, open source software, you can't offer demo versions. There's all sorts of limitations that the App Store prohibits, not just security.
Well, and we've talked about this before. Now we're in a position where if anybody wants, any developer who wants to put these 10.8 features inside their apps, now you can't do that outside the App Store. You have to, Apple will not allow access to those APIs to apps that are not available inside the App Store, which now means that every app that wants to use AirPlay has to be sandboxed. It has to conform to all these new restrictions. And we've talked about this before, but it's maybe a bad idea to be overly trusting of any company. At least be aware that anything that's a great idea in 2012 might turn out to be an awful idea in 2013 or 2014.
Well, I mean, I definitely worry that there are certain apps that I want to use that aren't going to be available, you know, or are going to be less available there. I think one of the other sides, though, is that as Apple transitions from being a fringe company with a fringe operating system to a mainstream company with a mainstream operating system, I think that they are kind of taking a different approach to security. Because they're becoming targets. We just saw this last one where we saw a Trojan horse get into the, so the thing is they're no longer off on the fringes where no one's targeting them. And so they're, and I think this is a much more heavy-handed way to do it than Microsoft did, but I think that...
it's a great idea. I mean, people can joke about how Apple users might think, oh, well, they don't care about having control over their machines. I think it's more of a case where they make a conscious choice where we give up certain fine-grained control over what happens on our machines, but the result is almost always, not always, but almost always a much more reliable and a much more consistent experience. I mean, top of the show, I gloated about how different Macs I've got running. I also have, you know, two or three different Windows machines, both for projects and also just so I can test things out on. And every single, the hair stands up on the back of my neck every time I sit down in front of these Windows machines. And if the thought occurs to me that if I'm on Twitter, Twitter client on a Windows machine, and I see that, here's an offer for, oh, wow, this is really great gold box deal on memory cards. I should buy that. Don't buy anything through a Windows machine that you've had running for more than 3 hours and is connected to the internet. There's probably a keylogger on it. It's a testimony to how Apple runs their systems that I have that absolute faith that my Mac doesn't have anything malicious installed on it. And so for that basis, I mean, Gatekeeper is certainly a good trade for just about everybody.
We should mention, that a lot of attention to that DNS changer malware that didn't break the internet yesterday. Somebody told me that on CNN, they actually said there's a new virus called DNS Changer that's going to shut the internet down on Monday. It's like, right. No, that's not exactly right. But but it did. Now, I said mistakenly, oh, you don't have to worry if you're on a Mac. But actually, I mean, you really don't have to worry. But there was a DNS Changer attempt on the Mac, but you had to, you know, like really work hard to get it on your system.
Well, actually, it did affect the Mac in that one of the things that some of these variants did was actually change the settings on your router.
So, that's right.
So every device you're using would be going through these bogus DNS.
But there was a DMG file called QuickTime Update. This was a couple of years back. That if you really were dumb, and your friend said, "Here, have a QuickTime Update. It's on me," and you did it, then you might, you know. Anyway, apparently that wasn't a big deal. Most people had gotten the message that, right. Thank goodness. So, any step that any company, Windows, Microsoft, or Apple makes towards making its operating system more locked down is a good thing.
Yeah.
And so giving people the choice to say, mom and dad, you can only use the App Store is a good thing.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's part of what makes Apple great. And part of the reason why they can actually do this stuff is because they're not willing to let PowerPC 601 chips.
Right.
It's okay to say, the power computing machine that you bought 10 years ago, we're okay with you not being an Apple customer anymore if you can't afford it, if you can't get yourself a new Mac.
And they're doing some pretty sophisticated stuff like address space layout randomization, which moves memory locations around. So, you know, one of the common attacks is to change data space, put code in data space, and then jump to it and execute it. But that only works if everything's in the same place all the time. If you move it around, it makes it much more difficult. That's in the kernel, as it should be. And Microsoft's doing that as well in Windows. The unique developer ID, so you can digitally sign apps, I think is great. Although, there'll probably be a hack around that at some point. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Sandblock. Boxing, which is very controversial with developers, our friend Daniel Jalkut of Red Mountain Software is not, Red Sweater Software is not
Red Sweater,
not thrilled about it.
Yeah. The large problem is that Apple, I think that they'd make a lot of developers happy if they made it a blanket rule that our own apps have to follow the exact same rules. I'm sorry, our own consumer apps have to follow the exact same rules, where if we're going to sell iPhoto, if we're going to sell Aperture, if we're going to sell GarageBand as an extra product or Pages, anything that a third-party developer might have to compete with, then Pages has to be fully sandboxed. Aperture has to follow every single rule that we inflict on other people. If nothing else, it would force their own in-house developers and their contractors to understand exactly the problems that that they're facing. The fact that they're exempt from their own rules is what causes a lot of the ill will out there in the developer space.
Good privacy controls, by the way. System preferences contains privacy controls for location sharing, diagnostic information sharing. You know, you're always asked, in the past you've always been asked, but now you could turn it off and on in the system preference panes. Safari will now have a do not track setting. Did they start that yet, or is that not available yet? I think that... Well, anyway, they're saying this is going to be in Mountain Lion.
And you finally search in the browser. You can search in the...
And a unified browser. Oh, God, that's the one thing that I use Safari on the Mac only because for some reason on my Macs, Chrome seems to be very slow. But I still have to... It's so hard. You open a new tab, and then you have to... You get Command-T and then Tab so that you go to the search. Yeah, you get so used to Chrome. I don't want to get rat-holed, so I got to... Okay, we're going to push a couple of things on the stack. The malware in the App Store, push that on the stack. And then we were talking about privacy, and now I've forgotten. See, my stack is screwed up. And then I want to talk about there's a developer movement afoot to make Chrome the default browser. It seems that it's possible if apps support it. Push that on the stack, would you?
Yes.
Who wants to be my stack? When I say pop, you tell me what to talk about, okay? And there's one other thing with privacy. You just write it down. That's no fair.
I got to write it down somewhere. I don't. My brain, I'm an old man. I can't remember.
It's so funny that they're now saying, search smart. Now there's one field for both web addresses and search terms. Wow. The last browser did actually do that. And then finally, all new features for China. Which is important if you're in China. Pop, push this on the stack. China gets the iPad. Okay. I think we're done with Mountain Lion. Anything else to say, anybody?
I think we need to move on.
Or can I stop? Now, wait a minute. Somebody's overwritten my stack with malicious code. Damn you. What about this E-Pete thing, huh? The city of San Francisco has just announced, sorry, we're not going to buy any more Macintosh computers. So Apple has pulled out of the E-Pete certification. This is something they did with the EPA and other electronics manufacturers. They were partly responsible for the standard. Many Apple devices, like the one in front of me, were E-Pete certified for two things. E-Pete is recyclability and energy efficiency, kind of like the Energy Star rating. And Apple's just decided we're done. We're not going to get our stuff certified anymore. That means, for instance, the federal government is required to buy 95% of its new computers have to be E-Pete. Many companies like Kaiser Permanente, HSBC have to buy E-Pete hardware. Ford. So that means these companies will not be buying Macs anymore.
Well, the question is, though, is that the gamesmanship they may be playing here is whether some of those organizations will change some of their standards based on that. You
know, I think they shouldn't. I think Apple's
saying they should, but
we don't want to make recyclable computers anymore. I bought it. You bought it. That Retina display. It can't be recycled because it's all glued into one big lump. And recyclers don't have the time or the tools to unglue the batteries to recycle them properly, to unglue the screen to recycle it properly. That's the problem with the iPad and the iPhone, which never were E-Pete certified. And I think that this is Apple saying, well, we want to sell cool stuff and we don't really care so much if it's recyclable.
I just think that there's going to be a certain number of those organizations that the IT guys may not want to do that, but I think that there are going to be people who are just kind of like, well, we want to have Macs running on the system because of a whole bunch of other issues. Well, and
believe me, I understand that, but don't you think there's a larger issue here, which is that Apple's moving away from these green standards?
I think that always the green standards is not at the top three of their list of priorities. They would never
They tout it like it is.
Well, they spend a lot of time.
There's a reason why when they talk about a new iPad, the first thing they talk about is the design. The second thing they talk about is the user experience. And at the end of the presentation, you know, before they bring out Tony Bennett, that's when they say, "Oh, and we decided that we're not going to use mercury and lead coated paint. We decided that maybe we'll use vegetable dyes instead of that."
North Carolina, you know, I'm just reading why all these companies are building, like Facebook and Apple are building their servers in North Carolina. The main reason is because it's very cheap electricity because 61% coal. I mean, look, I understand we as consumers, I bought the damn thing, are demanding thinner, lighter, better, you know, but I just feel like.
I feel like if I said this is horrible, I just bought one. I know. It was not. You know, it's kind of like I made my choice. I mean, you know, and I think that that's the problem is that it's hard for me to say that they should be stuck with that when I as a consumer made a choice to buy it anyway. You know, and knowing that it wasn't recyclable, we talked about it.
So we're
bad
too, but I'm just saying Apple should be better than we are.
Well, no, but it's how important is it? I mean, there are things that make computers go that are bad for the environment. They're also really bad to pull out of the earth, and they're also really bad for the people who have to work with them.
Uses the batteries as an example, lithium-ion batteries.
Right. And there are also reasons why we're not using Soviet style, you know, vacuum tubes and hand cranks to hand crank dynamos to get things working. If we want modern electronics, we have to sort of accept that these things this is the world that we live in. We can mitigate that. It's important to always be concerned about that. But it's difficult to say that I'm going to have a computer that's only made out of recycled wood pulp at all times.
Right.
There was a car called the Trabant that was made out of recycled cotton with all the body panels. It was not a great car. Great for the environment.
But doesn't mean you can't make a great computer that is fully recyclable, or does it?
Well, it's if you want to manufacture it the way that you want to, if you're as manufacturing and design oriented as Apple is, yes. And it's also the reason why, as much as I really, really want there to be more user accessibility to Apple products, there is a practical limit to how user repairable, you can make a device. If you really want to put the memory modules in a place where the user can get them, that limits the size and the shape and even sometimes the performance of the device that you're building. So you can still regret it. You can still mourn it. You can still say, I hope that future devices are better to repair. But you also have to acknowledge that sometimes it's not entirely, if the priority of a user repairability is not in the top five, it's easily knocked out by design, performance, and economics.
Clearly.
Yeah. I mean, what I'm saying is I don't think that Apple is being hypocrites. I don't think they're being callous and incorrect by simply saying that we can't build machines that conform to these guidelines, so we're just going to have to accept that some people are not going to be able to get them. I do think that it's just a case of the price of accepting some of these guidelines is too high for the goals that Apple has for itself and for its consumers.
I'm just a self-loathing gadget hound.
Enjoy. Is that sweater made out of hemp? And did you spin the wool yourself?
It is. It's completely recyclable.
Exactly.
And I'm wearing plastic shoes, made from fine virgin oil.
You're wearing 2-liter Coke bottles that you cut out and shoelaces on. Because why throw them out when Ed Begley Jr. says you can make wonderful shoes out of Mr. Pibb bottles?
What do you think about this server bug that I felt bad for Marco Arment of Instapaper, a couple of other developers, where they pushed updates and there was apparently Apple put some DRM on there that was buggy and crashed the updates.
I think Apple always puts DRM on it. I
mean, what is that DRM? What is Apple doing?
Well, I believe that's the whole system of it knowing who you are, and this is your key. You know, like when you're downloading.
So it modifies the update by sticking your address in there and who you are.
My understanding of it is that you're, you know, as a developer, you don't have to worry about the security, which is awesome. I mean, just to make sure it's clear, it's awesome that as a developer, you don't have to worry about the security, that Apple will worry about that for you at a system level.
That's true.
When you're doing it with the App Store, it makes it much easier for them to keep it updated, keep it moving, but they're constantly updating it. They're constantly improving it. And what they did here, and so what happens is they take your code, they inject the DRM into it,
right.
And then that's when someone buys it. And then that means that when you download it, that version, that download is customized to your computer.
By the way, I have to say that as DRM goes, it's very non-onerous. I mean, you basically, when you buy something on the App Store, you get to run it on any computer. I mean, there's technically a limit, but I mean, I haven't.
All I got to say is, you know, I got a new computer coming, and all I'm going to have to do, except for the pro apps that I have.
That's what I did.
I'm literally going to hit install.
Even the pro apps now, I mean, Logic, Final Cut, all the Motion.
Mac, all the Apple all stuff Apple will be easy. Apps, and then with Adobe and Autodesk and everything else, I'll be like, oh.
It was really a nice thing. I just went, yeah, put them all on there. Done.
You got to admit, that makes it really hard to buy stuff outside of the App Store. If it's not something that's very specialized, if it's not a like Photoshop or something like that you have to have, I have to have anyway.
I was really pleased. We had purchased Logic. My son uses it for composing, and I had purchased the boxed version of it. But as soon as I was lending him my Air for the. He's at Berklee College of Music this week, and I lent him my Air. And Logic's not on it. It doesn't have a disk drive. I would have to find the disk. I said, just buy it on the App Store, and then you have it forever. We have it forever.
Right.
You know. Yeah. It's wasting money. But it's so convenient.
I have stuff that I bought previously that I bought on the App Store specifically because it was something that I could – that I knew that I'd be able to just constantly upgrade. It was all part of the system.
Right.
You know, it was just – it's cool.
So the server that was generating the code, in other words, sticking in whatever it sticks in, probably your email address, and it has to be some code because –
some kind of hash that's based on you so that it knows that it's your app.
Because you can't give the file to somebody else. They can't use it. It's authorized only for you. So Apple said the bug affected only a small number of users. The issue has been rectified. I never liked that word. I don't know why. And we don't expect it to occur again. It will never happen again. Good Reader and Instapaper at least had the problem. So let's pop the stack. iOS malware hits the App Store. The first. It was the Russian program. Which is also on Android, so just don't feel so smug, Android. It's called Find and Call. It was available in the Google Play Store, Russian version of the store, as well as the Apple App Store, secretly harvesting data from users' address books, sending the information to developers' servers, and then spamming you with SMS messages. If you've gotten any SMS spam lately, check and see if you have that app. It was advertising itself as a tool for aggregating and simplifying contacts. Kaspersky Labs says... Well, this is what it's doing. Now, I guess the problem is Apple implies that, you know, one of the reasons that App Store is safer is we check everything. But there's so many apps being submitted every day, they can't possibly thoroughly check everything. This is an example of stuff does sneak by, right?
Yeah, I think that's...
So is it a false sense of security we have?
I think you always have to be careful about what you're doing. I think that it's...
But I got it from the App Store.
It's much safer on the App Store than it is on the website. I mean, you know, because the website's not going to... You know, it's... Even after it's been found, there's no chance that... You know, there's another chance that it's going to pop up somewhere else. Or it could be even on the same website. And it could stay there for years or months. And this was found out and taken down. And
the author of the app says, spamming feature bug. We are in process of fixing bug. Yeah, you know, one.
Our program got detected.
Moose
and being removed.
Moose and Squirrel got
inside. We will have new version of the Doodlebug clone that will harvest all of your App Store IDs without ever being detected. Yes. Don't worry.
I mean, the one thing you know is that after this happens, the one thing you know is that from that developer will probably have zero chance of getting anything into the App Store.
He ain't getting a certificate.
Like, you know, they're going to have to find somebody else to submit them. They're going to have to reincorporate. They're going to have to, you know, there's going to be a whole lot of things that happen on the other side of that. I think that's probably the warning for many.
And you're right. It's safer, but don't have the false sense of security. And that's why you need things like Gatekeeper to make it even better. And actually, it's not Gatekeeper so much. It's this new sandboxing. Because you have to, as a developer, say, well, as among other things, I need to access your contact list. And you have to, it says that in the manifest, and then you have to ask permission, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, so it's all being done with user interaction, especially on the Mac OS side. It can't even do something as, it can't even do anything as simple as if part of this word processor's core functionality is that it shares files via Dropbox, it can't look for the Dropbox folder where it expects it to be and automatically connect to it. It has to ask you to find it, please, for it and point to it for it to start working.
7.85-inch iPad to ramp up production in September. Foxconn Brazil available in October. Do we believe this? You said, Andy, and I love this, that Apple is not aware of the competition, doesn't make stuff because of the competition, doesn't react to competition. This would seem to be a reactive device responding to the Kindle Fire and the Google Nexus 7.
I think that my review of the Nexus 7 is coming out tomorrow. Lots of cool stuff.
It's awesome, isn't it?
The more I play with it, I thought I was going to be ready with it on Friday, but then I started playing with it as a tablet as opposed to a media device, and it's great stuff.
The only negative on that, I think, is the screen brightness is a little dim, but other than that, I'm very impressed.
Exactly. Screen brightness is a little dim. I wish I had a couple of extra specific features that could really bring it up into a different class of device, but really, really nice thing.
For $200, that's the point.
This is not a 200. It's what I won't get this into a 10-minute thing about this device. But this is an Asus device, and they are every time that I get a laptop or any product from Asus, and I think I know. Oh, well, this is a $750 ultrabook. No, it's a $430 netbook. It's like, oh
yeah,
but it's built so well, it doesn't look like crap. It's
They're
fast. It's responsible. It doesn't. Yeah.
So is Apple responding to this? I mean, are they saying, look?
I don't think they're necessarily responding to other devices. What they would do is they would respond to the fact that people are reacting well to these devices. I think that they could always do a good job with a 7-inch tablet, but they're not really convinced that people actually want them. And when you have a device like this that actually sells well, then this is a good vote that says that this is something that people actually want to do. I'm not naive enough to think that Apple isn't willing to protect their supremacy in the tablet market, but I also believe that Apple is the very last company that would rush out a product that it didn't intend to make just because they feel as though there's going to be competition in that space.
So when Steve Jobs interrupted that analyst call a couple of years ago and said,
"Yeah,
we would never make this. This is terrible." Disinformation, or did he really mean it at the time?
The famous line, I think, came actually during the iPad unveil, which is that we looked at 7-inch tablets, and a 7-inch tablet should ship with sandpaper so people can file down their fingertips to actually operate it. And that joins so many other great Steve Jobs quotes about how people don't want to watch movies on iPads and people don't like ebooks. It's on the getting away from Steve Jobs, the Apple philosophy has always been, it's not that a 7-inch tablet is a bad idea, it's just that other companies have made bad 7-inch tablets by simply not thinking it through. So if Apple did make a 7-inch tablet, they would think it through. That's why when I talk about this to other people, the big matter of debate is how would they change the iPad to make a good 7-inch version of it? I've heard other people speculate about how, oh, well, it'd be easy. There'd be more than enough screen resolution to just simply scale down existing iPad 1 and iPad 2 apps. And I think that's the last thing that they would do. That is the sand down your fingertip problem to actually make sure you can target all the buttons and things properly. I think that they would I think that they would do a large-scale iPod Touch and have a different form factor and have a new class of apps that would take advantage of it.
Gruber had an interesting post. I think he was quoting somebody else, but he said, you know, if you do a screenshot of the existing, because it's going to be 1024 by 768. We're pretty much sure of this, as sure as we are of any of this stuff, on a 7.85. If you do a screenshot on the existing iPad and then you turn it sideways, what happens? Can you get the over-the-shoulder on this? This is roughly what a 7-inch iPad would be, and those are not too small to use. This is roughly the form factor. Maybe it's a little taller. So that's what, you know, sand your fingers. Is this? I have big fat fingers. I think this is usable. I could see tapping.
Here's the thing: is when we talk about
using the phone,
right? Exactly. The phone is smaller than that, and we don't have any problem with that. In fact, I'd rather type on the phone than type on my iPad. I mean, I'm faster on the phone than I am on my iPad.
But are the targets the same size? Are the buttons the same size?
No, they're bigger.
To be more precise, the size of the buttons, the size of the screen can change, but the size of the buttons cannot change. If the size of a button is a certain proportion relative to the size of my fingertip, that has to be the same size on a Retina iPad, that has to be the same size on an iPhone, and that would have to be the same size on a 7-inch iPad. So I certainly wouldn't put it past Apple to, just as with the first iPad, they allowed existing iPhone apps to run at double resolution. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't put it past them to simply say that this will run non-optimized apps at 1-to-1 scale. However, in 3 or 4 months' time, the exact same thing would happen with the 7-inch iPad that would happen with the iPad, where almost every app developer that is interested in supporting this device would come out with their own custom version that takes advantage of that screen size, as opposed to simply allowing people to have what might be a substandard experience with a scaled down version of this with smaller targets on a 7-inch.
Trojan Kitten has sent me an image.
Adorable. Come on in through the fort, Trojan Kitten. Trojan
Kitten. So the key point on this is it would be a 4:3 ratio, and everything else, including the Kindle Fire and Nexus 7, are 16:9 or 16:10. So it's 40% larger because of this larger, this different aspect ratio. Although it's still half the size of a traditional iPad.
Yeah, well, half the area, right?
I mean, half the area. Size, yes.
And that is a huge difference. This is something that really hit me with the Kindle Fire and has only been underscored with the Nexus 7, that this is such a different experience than a 10-inch iPad. As small and compact and light as the 10-inch iPad is, the difference between something that you can easily hold in one hand and you never tire out, that you can easily slip in any pocket that you have, it really makes it a more intimate device and makes it a more useful device. Doesn't make it a better device, but it's a different experience. And I would be very curious to see what Apple would do with iOS in a larger screen size that could be actually toted around a little bit better.
I think I'd actually prefer a 7-inch over the current version.
I like, when I had the Galaxy 7 a year ago, I thought, this is actually not bad. This is good. And the Fire I liked. And now this Nexus 7 is great.
I find that
it's not a horrible size.
I use my iPhone a lot more than my iPad.
Yeah.
And I find that part of it's portability.
Portability.
It's just that it's the iPad I have to think about. I still have to think about a little bit about whether I'm going to take it with me or not. I don't feel like I can just throw it in one of my cargo pockets or something like that. And so that, some of my cargo pockets.
Web 3137 says that's exactly why he likes the playbook. It's just that never came. Yeah. There were no apps.
See, well, that's why I've been having an interesting experience with the Nexus 7, because I'm now at the point where I'm trying to use it as a tablet as much as possible. And so it works with Bluetooth. So I've got it inside a keyboard. I've got that same really cool keyboard case for the Apple Wireless keyboard. I'm using it with this. By the way, all the iPad function keys off of any Bluetooth iPad keyboard mapped directly to the appropriate functions on this too, I discovered. But that's beside the point. I find that I can easily work with Google Docs or a simple text-based text editor with this. The difference that I explain it in the review is that there are two major roles that I use the iPad as a notebook. One is where I just want to leave the house and just work for 2 or 3 hours at the coffee shop and just get out of the house for a little bit. And for that, this 7-inch screen works just fine. Then there's the other scenario where I'm leaving the house for 2 or 3 days and I want to use this as a replacement for a notebook, and this just doesn't work at all. But in terms of running out of the house and having a computing device that I could use to edit documents on, this works pretty darn well. I could only assume that an iOS device would work even better, but I was surprised at how useful this is. And it's all because Android decided not to disable features that are built into Android and built into the hardware that might not make exclusive sense for a device that will primarily be used as an ebook reader. The fact that they included full Bluetooth support adds a hell of a lot of value to this $199 device.
Well, and I think that from a business perspective, I mean, beyond the technology of it, I think that Apple has a long history of closing up the gap. Mm. They start high, and then they just slowly add more iterations, whether it's the iPod Nano and the iPod Shuffle. The idea is they're going to keep on giving you an opportunity to buy one of their products, buy into the ecosystem at a variety of different price points. I think that when you look at schools, I mean, I think it's, you know, we're building a whole education system in Rwanda based on the iPad.
And really? Wow.
Yeah, I mean, the whole school.
Why not something cheaper?
Because it's the cost of development. If the iBook Author is what we're building all the training on, and so
This is why I thought iBook Author was important. There you go. It's lock in into that ecosystem. So you're going
to
buy a $300 more expensive tablet because you've got the software on it.
Exactly. The software is free. We can build the stuff out. We can build it fast. We can build it easy. We can have the students building it. We can have the teachers building it. You know, the thing is that the iBook Author is the Trojan horse. I mean, it is the, if schools, as soon as they buy into another platform without that development tool, they're screwed. You know what I mean? Because now they have to buy from some service. They have to do something, you know, but they're not going to be able to develop their own content as easily and quickly. You know, and so, because you can have, like, you can imagine schools having instead of having to write a paper, what if you had to build an iBook that is the exam, you know, teaching the other students what you learned about, you know, whatever, Civil War. And so the point is that, you know, and having that as a free application is a big deal. So that's why we chose to do that. But I can see a $199 version with iBook Author as a frontal attack on the OLPC. You know, I mean, you know, because now you're talking about a price point at $199. I mean, I think $199 is the number. I think that if they go, you know, if they
you
go,
think
to,
they'll hit the.
I don't know if they can.
They'll match the.
But I'm saying if they hit $199, it's scorched earth.
Google, I mean, or Asus says it's not making money on these.
I think that a smaller Apple still has a level of scale that I think everyone else doesn't. I mean, they buy, you know. I think you talked about on Twit, they bought all the aluminum.
I made that up, but it's kind of like it. They bought everything.
I've talked to people who can't build their hardware because Apple bought all the chips in the world.
Yeah.
Some little one penny chip that they bought all of them. You know, and so, you know, and they bought the future of them. You know, like they bought the future.
That you listen to Twit. Thank
you. That's what I do when I'm cleaning my house, listening to Twit. But I think that. I think from a business perspective, I think Apple is sensitive to the idea of leaving too much space out. I think the mistake that they made with the iPhone, I don't know if they had any other choice, was by not allowing it on Verizon and Sprint and all these other ones early on. They left this massive gap that now Android, you know, owns. And Android is a larger operating system than iOS. I don't know if it's as profitable, but it's a larger one. And I don't think that they'd plan to repeat that in the tablet space. So I think that, you know, lowering that price, getting a price point at $199, I think would make an enormous amount.
If they can do it.
$299 will help. $249 will help more. But I think they hit $199 and it makes it almost impossible to build a tablet in this space. It would be almost impossible to survive trying to build a tablet. And that would be it.
Amazing.
I think even if they sold it at almost no margin, which is not an Apple thing to do, I think denying the space, I think, has a lot of opportunity for Apple down the road.
Yeah, because if people, the most room to compete with Apple has always been to build things that Apple doesn't want to build. Witness all these really cool Android phones that have great features that Apple has no interest in. So if Apple were to put their own like pocketable tablet, mm-hmm. it would then become which one has a better operating system, which one has better apps, and there it's absolutely no contest, is it?
Right, and Lone Frog, by the way, on the IRC said that the iBook author is not magic. Google or someone else could develop it, and they should.
But yeah, why haven't they? It's been a while now.
The warning now is if they don't, eventually, it's going to become a standard. You know, for not just...
I don't know about that, but...
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's just that it's so hard to develop.
It's amazing what it can do. I don't see people going, oh, yeah.
People are getting their head around it.
Are they?
It takes a while. I mean, this is a new thing to kind of start figuring out, but I think...
I don't think everybody, most people are as good as you guys at taking these technologies.
It's Keynote. Like, if you know how to use Keynote, you can build a book. I mean, that's the crazy thing. Yeah. So
it sounds like we're all in agreement. Apple's going to do a 7.85-inch tablet. Yep. It's going to be out this fall, and it's going to be $200. There you go. You heard it here first.
For eight.
By the way, the UK judge, Colin Bierce, has said, go ahead, you could sell the Galaxy Tab. They don't imitate the iPad because Samsung isn't cool enough to copy
Apple. I'm not sure if this was a win or a lose by Samsung.
I mean, that either.
They won the case and they got backhanded by the judge in a way that's all the press.
He says you can't block the Galaxy Tab 10. Because Apple, it doesn't violate Apple's registered design because Samsung's not cool enough and do not have the same understated and extreme simplicity which is possessed by Apple design.
I think it's pretty damaging for Samsung. I mean, to be just like,
No, it isn't. They get to sell their
yeah, they do.
Inelegant tablet in the UK.
But
and
how many people in the UK are going to find out about that and go, oh, right, so it's I not, be cool. not the cool one.
It's not cool. To own
was the judge riding like a fixed gear bicycle and drinking a PBR while he said
it's very hipster judge. Very hipster. Oh, I'm sorry. You're not cool enough. Wow. Okay.
I think Samsung would rather have the judgment in its favor.
That's
and
what
be
I think.
Told that sure. it's uncool than the other way around.
Yeah. Sure. Although you're right. All the press was Samsung's not cool.
Right.
Samsung does have a bunch of ads, and one of the ads, the Andy Dongle ad, I thought was quite good. We always show the Apple.
We should share that one.
It's a pretty funny ad, although it's an ad for the Samsung Galaxy S3 to show what it can do and that, the iPhone can't. But, these ads really show what the S3 can do in a limited ecosystem. If everybody has an S3, for instance, it's easy to share pictures.
Well, and also, if you have an iPad, if you have an Apple TV hooked into your conference room, then you can do this with your iPhone and iPad right now. So it's
So this is to demonstrate all share.
He's looking for his dongle.
We need a dongle.
Yes, we need a dongle.
Brandon usually brings the dongle.
Susan, do you have a dongle?
No, I didn't bring my dongle.
Having a little dongle issue.
Dooley has a dongle.
I don't have a dongle, sir.
Let's get started.
Do you guys have a dongle?
We're not using a dongle. See? It's pretty cool, huh?
Share files instantly, only on the Galaxy S3.
That's a good ad.
By the way, that is what every conference, like I speak at NAB.
Do you
and
have
Macro.
A dongle? Where's the dongle? Where's the dongle?
Do you need,
I always bring my own
you need
dongle.
VGA or DVI or HDMI?
Yeah. I always, that's the thing. I have a little dongle kit. Yeah, I have my dongle kit. Bought them all. Buy all 12. Collect all 12. But you're right. Apple TV, I think what you just said, Andy, about taking your Apple TV on the road with you and using the... Wow, that's amazing. Pop.
You waiting for the next one on the stack?
I've tried to pop the stack, guys.
Chrome is a browser. Chrome is a browser. Chrome as the default browser.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Okay, dropping off the stack. China gets the iPad.
China gets the iPad. Actually, we said it all. This is a July 20th. The new iPad goes to China.
That was the only
That was because they resolved the lawsuit from the company.
But now there's a lawsuit about Siri.
Oh, of course there is. Who cares? I don't care anymore. Chrome. So some developer was on Hacker News today said, look, if we all just put this little code in here that says if when somebody clicks on a link, if Chrome, launch Chrome. If not, launch Apple's browser, launch Safari. Then it doesn't have to be the default browser. In other words, Safari's only the default browser if none is specified. So an app could specify or could check for a browser.
Well, I'd love to see that in the preferences. Cause
I would too.
I'd really love to go to Chrome.
Well, and that's what that's what this guy was saying. He said, you know, if somebody's got Chrome on their iPad or iPhone, it's because they want to use it.
Right.
Right.
It's not like, oh, I accidentally put Chrome on here.
Well, and assuming if you're in the Chrome ecosystem, if you're signed in and you have a lot of the, assuming that this is, I haven't really dug into it too deeply yet, but it ties into all your other Chrome experiences. It's a big deal for people who use a lot of Google Apps and right. Chrome like me.
I think we've said enough.
We've moved on. We move on.
What was it? So it was China. It was Chrome. There was one other thing. Boy, this is why I need a real stack. Not a human stack.
We had malware, and then we already talked
malware
about
malware. We did. So I those are the three things. All right, good. I know what I have to pop. My Ford mobile app. And then we will do our picks of the week. Andy, I want you to start doing mountain lion
tips. Have we given up tips?
We have not. If you have an iOS tip, I will do it.
I got a tip.
And I wish Andy would start doing some mountain lion tips, but of course it's a little early.
Specifically mountain lion?
Yeah, I don't know.
I do have a tip ready.
Okay. Doesn't have to be specific. But just, I'm saying going forward at some point. I'd love to hear some more about mountain lion. This is so I can steal it for my cruise. Cruise lecture. I'll give you credit. And now, an Andy Iannutko tip. But first, let's talk about electric vehicles. The Ford Focus, 2012 Focus, is out. You can get it at your EV-certified Ford dealer right now. It is awesome. And when you go to test drive it, bring your smartphone. You can bring your iPhone, your BlackBerry phone, or even your BlackBerry phone or your Android phone. Even your BlackBerry. They have an app for it. And you install it, and then you can control the charging. I mean, it will tell you where the plug-in, you know, chargers are, where you're going. It will help you choose the most eco-friendly route. This is just so cool. This is their kind of demonstration of what a smartphone app can do when you design the car as a platform for apps. There's an API and the whole thing. The 2012 Ford Focus, you can find out more about it and all the electric technologies being offered by Ford at ford.com/technology. And they have a little bit about the My Ford mobile app and My Ford mobile website, by the way. You can log into the website and see who's on the leaderboard for most CO2 saved.
Is the Focus shipping?
Oh, yeah. It's out. Yeah. Well, you know, I should go down. We'll go down and take a look. The app will tell you where your car is. I love that. He lost his car.
I lost my car at the liquor store. This is such a bad. I wasn't drunk. I just want to say I hadn't had anything to drink.
Well, and the irony is, liquor store is like across the street.
It's
from
like
your
a block
house.
And a half away.
But you called the Petaluma police saying my car is stolen, and they found it.
They did
at the liquor store,
and then they made a lot of fun of me.
Did they? Did they laugh at you? They're nice guys.
They were nice.
I like the
Petaluma very
nice. PD.
They didn't charge me for it, which I thought I was going to get something.
I know, really.
An idiot.
No, they felt sorry for you.
It's like an idiot charge.
If you had this app, you wouldn't have needed that.
Yes.
When you get the Ford Focus, you can charge it on regular AC, but you're going to want to get the power charger, the 240-volt charger, because then it charges a couple of hours. And it will also, the phone will say, it's charging. This is what its charge level is. You can press a button and it says charge only at the off-peak rates, things like that. It's really cool. I know I'm making a big deal out of this, but what it really means is that they have put hooks in. There's an API for the car. They put hooks in the car so that you can write apps for it. I'm telling you, this is mind boggling. Just trust me, you'll see why this changes everything.
Do you get the HOV sticker?
I don't know if California does the HOV sticker anymore.
Yeah, they do. That's always
well. You'll get a HOV sticker. What's more HOV than an all-electric vehicle that does 110 miles per gallon?
So I think most of these you get a HOV sticker. The reason that's important
get a HOV sticker.
For all of you who commute is getting a HOV sticker means that you can be by yourself in the high-occupancy vehicle lane,
right?
Which is a big deal in San Francisco.
A.K.A. the carpool lane.
Yes.
Why they decided to call it the HOV lane, I don't know.
HOV.
HOV. Is it HOV or HOV?
I don't know.
Could be either. I mispronounce things all the time. People are now tweeting me, telling me I mispronounce stuff. It's great. I just love the Twitter. All right. Thank you, Ford, for your support, by the way. Ford.com/technology. An iOS tip from you there, laddie. What do you got for us?
So, I have kids. I know you never know that, but
yes.
I never talk about it. And so one of the problems that I have is that my kids both have my old iPads. And they play Angry Birds, but then when you click on Angry Birds, there's one place where you can go to movies. And when you go to movies, it takes them to YouTube. And then before you know, within 10 seconds, they're watching some movie where they're swearing really loud.
Not good. Not good.
You know, and so, you know, I just didn't know what else to do other than turn them off of Wi-Fi. But there's things that they want to be able to download and they want to be able to look at stuff.
Yeah, it's too bad.
I mean, like they're 4 years old already. I mean, you
something like parental controls. I wish there was something like that.
So what you have is restrictions, which I didn't know anything about. So under your general settings, there is restrictions. And if you turn that restriction on, you can enable restrictions and put in a little code. So once you put that code in, there are things that you can basically turn off. So you can't open Safari or YouTube or Camera or FaceTime or iTunes or Ping. I know the Ping one will be hard for you all. But here we go. You cannot install apps, or you cannot delete apps, or you can't use dictation.
A way to block Ping.
Yes. So here, we'll block Ping. Okay, now it's
that's
off.
It's kind of funny.
So you can block. So you can basically put all this together. And so what that means is that without the login code, they can't open Safari or YouTube specifically. Those are the ones that we want to be able to turn off, so that they don't end up with swearing movies.
Right.
My wife gets very upset about it. You know, I'm just kind of like, well, eventually they're going
to. That she doesn't want them to watch it, or just doesn't want them to swear really loud?
I think she just doesn't want our kids to swear. Period. I think that's the bottom line. She doesn't want our kids to go
they're pretty young.
To their preschool and swear in front of the other kids.
Yeah,
I think that's the makes the mom look bad. Yeah. So anyway, that's turning on restrictions will let you have a little bit more control over what your kids do with their iPad.
Parental restrictions are fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Andy Inoko, do you have... Wow, I'm sorry. I was looking at magazines in the... never mind. Andy, do you have a tip for an OS X?
I have one of those simple tips that has been lurking underneath your keyboard for a long time, waiting to leap into action when you are stupid and can't think of something. You're familiar that most Cocoa apps have built-in autocorrect in their text editors, so that if you misspell a word and you haven't disabled the feature, it'll underscore say, "Hey, idiot."
Here's numbskull.
numb feet. You haven't.
Hey, numb foot.
After the show, I have to tell you about an incident in which I almost said a naughty word and then said, oh boy, you know, I almost said a naughty word and then I corrected myself by saying a word that's even naughtier. But anyway.
Okay.
Back to words. So oftentimes I can't spell a word like Renaissance. And so I'll try it like four different times. It doesn't work. Then finally I'll hold down the option key, click on it to get like a suggested spelling. And sometimes I've done such a bad job of spelling it, there are no suggestions.
Right.
There is an actual way to force autocomplete, where I'm pretty sure the first three letters of Renaissance are REN, because my friends who go to Renfest. If you just type the first few letters of the word and then hit the escape key, that will pop up a list of suggested completed words. And usually, more often than not at least, the word that you wanted is actually at the top of the list. So if you can't even guess at it, or if you are humble enough to realize that you are not going to be able to guess correctly at this word, you can just simply punt two or three letters into the word and it will give you a list of eight to 10 candidates that it might be.
Very nice. Autocomplete. Helps you spell Renaissance.
Renaissance.
Renaissance. You got to remember the French. It's the rebus.
All I know about the Renaissance are hey, naughty, naughty, and huzzah. Also, turkey legs were really, really popular back then.
Yes, yes. And guys wore baggy tights. I seem to remember some of that as well. Do you have a pick of the week for us, Alex?
Yes.
You could start. You know, I can drive if you want because I just downloaded it.
I'm good to go.
Oh, all right.
So I want to return to one.
Oh, it's on your Mac.
I want to return to one, okay. and then I'll have another pick as well. Okay. The return to one is there's one called Blotter, which I think when I was excited about it, and now I've been using it, and it's just
I don't remember that. I must have been here that week.
All right. So Blotter, you can download it on the Mac App Store, and what it does is it takes your iCal and puts it on your desktop. So,
ooh, like a blotter,
it uses your desktop image. So there you can see how screwed I am this week.
Yeah.
So anyway,
$10.
So now I can turn. I have a couple of them turned off right now. But you have all these. You can turn on and off different calendars.
And all your calendars will show up, and you have a to-do list. You have what's going on right now, like a little snapshot, as well as the next 7 days or just the week to week. And it really, you know, my biggest problem is I don't show up for meetings because I don't realize they're
happening.
And so it's really important as and we've already kind of created a culture within our company that you have to put it on. You know, you have to send out an either iCal or Google calendar schedule, or the meeting doesn't exist. And we don't feel bad about missing it.
This only works with iCal? I think it works with Google Cal too, right?
I believe it works with Google Cal, but my iCal is looking at my Google calendar.
You see, I don't use iCal. I use BusyCal.
I don't know if it'll work with the other ones, but I know that this will look at, I'm only having it look at iCal, but iCal in turn is looking at my Google iCal,
right.
my Google calendar.
Right.
So. Anyway, so it's great. It puts it up there. You can't click on it, which is great, so that you don't accidentally. It's just in the background, and you can see it. Now, you can add. You can also. There is a little menu item that allows you to add new events or new reminders, and, of course, you can quit it there as well. Anyway, so it's a great little application that makes it all work. Now, the
this is sweet. I'm just installing it.
Maybe I haven't recommended this one before.
No, you might have. I just
anyway.
Don't.
So it really. I just have so much going on most of the time that I just have to have something in front of me constantly. And it's great because now instead of opening iCal, I go, what do I have coming up next? And it's got a little nice little line that shows where I am in the day and so on and so forth. So anyway, so that's cool. And then the other thing I was kind of into is of course the new G Plus
Google Plus
has been released on,
which no one uses, but now is even more beautiful.
You know what's kind of funny is that I find G Plus, my posts to G Plus get a lot more, maybe
oh, yeah.
just the kind of people.
Oh, yeah.
I get a lot more response on them than I get on Twitter or Facebook.
And this is beautiful. They've had
it. It is amazing.
Yeah. They announced it for the Android tablets at Google I.O. a couple of weeks ago. They said they were going to do it for iPad, and they've done a nice job. It's
really
like
when you go, see how they all kind of
isn't that sweet?
I mean, I think this is the best mobile app out there right now. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that Facebook or Twitter. No, new Twitter was released during our show, I think. So I haven't looked at that one as much yet. But it's pretty slick. And then, of course,
and you can play the videos right in the thing, which is nice.
And then you can just click Hangout.
There's Lamar. we gotta get Lamar back on the. He's so great. How do I get rid of this thing, though? Why didn't you all watch that one, man? Oh man, this is cool. This is beautiful.
Really, really well integrated.
I love how those.
Yeah. And the Hangouts are all totally integrated, so if you hit your little bars at the top there, you can... Oops, I took it off. Sorry. Do I have to pull it back out? Oh, there you go.
There's little bars.
Yeah, so you hit those, and Hangouts are right there, so you can hit...
And you can use the iPad's camera and everything.
Yeah. And it's just... And you select a couple, just click on a few people, and you can invite them to a Hangout. You know, it's actually much easier than the... it won't do it immediately. Yeah, okay, yeah, you can do it with...
I'll just pick one person and start.
But you can see how you can just kind of click, 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 and then invite them.
Hello.
Based on their picture.
And you can see yourself.
Yeah. So
that's cool.
So anyway, that's my pick.
I like that. And hang up on my Hangout. How do you hang up on a Hangout? There. Andy and Iko, your pick of the week.
My pick of the week is actually a magazine, a new magazine by one of my favorite podcasters in the whole world, Jeff Goldsmith. Jeff Goldsmith had this really great screenwriting podcast called the Q&A, where he would host, centered in LA, he would host a screening of a popular movie or a classic movie, and then do a two-hour Q&A with the screenwriter that talks all about how the script was put together, the guy's career, and what his theories are in storytelling, but also the problems that he confronted in putting this together. And it's the exact opposite of the sort of stuff that we were talking about earlier about, the thing is, I feel as though I'm a conduit for my muse. When I'm in that zone, no, it's all about, and then they said, oh, good news, we just signed Zach Galifianakis, so you need to change that character so it can be played by Zach Galifianakis. That's the sort of stuff. If you can, this isn't it. I will make this a double pick. Definitely do a Google search for the podcast of the Q&A about the movie Valkyrie with Tom Cruise, because the screenwriter is also the screenwriter of the Usual Suspects. And so it is a two-hour conversation just about one of the most incredible screenwriters with the most incredible stories about how he puts these things together ever. So Jeff is just editor-in-chief of Creative Screenwriting Magazine. He's put together this new magazine called Backstory that is essentially like the Q&A, only in magazine form. So they're interviews with writers and interviews with storytellers, and it's very slickly produced, very nicely put together. It's not just someone took a Microsoft Word file and converted it to an EPUB or anything like that. Very nicely put together. What I love about it is that I downloaded the first issue and I saw a couple of really good articles. Here's an interview with the person, one of the people who was responsible for Pixar's Brave for the story there. Here's another one about a couple of different unproduced screenplays. And the interviews are really, really good. The stories are really, really good. But then like at the end it says, oh, and here's the complete screenplay of the movie that we're just talking about. Or here's a movie that you can now watch all about that. I think that I'm looking at the archives of the past six issues. Because it just keeps scrolling, the table of contents just keeps scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. So you buy one issue, and I think it's truly something that you can then dip into for 2 weeks worth of reading. If you like movies, if you like storytelling, if you like the craft of writing, great, great, great stuff, start to finish. And the good news is that he just kicked it off with issue number one. You can go to the Newsstand app and go to iTunes and download the backstory, the Newsstand app. The first issue is free, so you can get that all for free right now. It's going to be bi-monthly. And this is the very first time that I've actually subscribed to any magazine off of iOS. Doesn't matter how much I like the New Yorker. Doesn't matter how much I like these other magazines. I've never said, okay, I will buy a year's worth of issues of this, because the first one was just so good and such a rich container full of stuff to read.
What's the name of it again?
It's called Backstory.
Backstory.
B-A-C-K-S-T-O-R-Y.
And
The cover is the classic version. You can see it here. Prometheus being attacked by an actual alien. because that's one of the stories here. But man, like here's the table of contents behind me, and it just keeps going and going and going and going and going and going. Like here's the writers behind The Dictator, Sasha Baron Cohen. Just great, great stuff. As I said, I read two or three articles I really, really liked, but then there was still at least a half a dozen things or a dozen things left to go through. So good stuff.
Well, I'm a big fan of the movies. So that sounds good. And you're right, because you're picking mine are complimentary. This just came out. It's called Next Issue. I think it came out on Android first, just came out for the iPad today. You can go to nextissue.com and learn a little bit more about it. What if there were a newsstand where you pay one flat fee, kind of like Netflix or Hulu Plus, and you get all the magazines? That's the idea. $10 a month gets you, they say, dozens of top magazines. Condé Nast is clearly a part of this, so there are quite a few magazines. Wired, Esquire, People Magazine, Entertainment Weekly, Golf Digest. If you pay $15 a month, you can also get weekly magazines like the New Yorker, People, and Sports Illustrated. So you pay one flat fee, and you get all these choices of all these magazines. The good news is 30 days free. So I downloaded a few magazines. Some of them are pretty cool, like the Wired magazine.
Is it the interactive one, or is it just the...
Well, that's what's interesting. It looks like it's up to the magazine to decide how nicely they're going to be. So the Wired magazine starts with a video, and then it resolves into the cover of Wired magazine. That's kind of cool. Here come the drones. The UI seems to vary depending on the magazine. So in this case, this is, you know, we're seeing it in landscape mode. You scroll through it. When you see something that has more below, some of the magazines show an arrow down, but, you know, you pretty much learned that you have to scroll right and left. If you tap the bottom, you actually get a pretty nice index of all the pages, including chapters and titles, so you can quickly jump where you want. Also, the table of contents is live, so if you browse the table of contents, you can tap an article and get to that. So that's Wired magazine, and you see they have all the issues. I think it says on mine. I don't know if this has to do with my available memory or if this is something they really do, but it says I can have a maximum of 192 issues. I don't know if that's me.
I think that might be your memory.
It might be my memory. I don't know. But, you know, that's a lot. In other words, that's plenty. Some of the magazines, I'll show you real simple, which is a nice little kind of cooking and lifestyle magazine, and you can see it's not portrait mode. It's only. It's not landscape mode. It's only portrait mode. So that would be a little bit frustrating. But I guess they felt like, well, our magazine, this is our magazine format, so it just makes more sense that way. You get all the ads. You notice, it's basically the contents of the magazine.
So, but it doesn't have a lot of interactive features built into it. It's just
it depends on the magazine. It does. So, you like Kate Upton? Who doesn't like Kate Upton? So, this is the latest GQ magazine.
I'm so out of it. I don't even know who Kate Upton is.
I don't either.
Oh, okay, okay. I was like,
I have no
you're
idea.
Like, everyone likes her.
But there's lots of pictures of her, and then there's a video in there. So, when you say interactive, I don't know.
Okay. It doesn't. There is some.
It doesn't look too interactive, but there is multimedia.
But it's not just a scan of the magazine.
No, like it's not. And in this case, you're probably glad of that. So let me just get at it. This is what kind of caught my attention earlier and made me completely. Now you're gonna pay $15.99 a month if you want to get People magazine. But you know, I want to know, why did Katie leave Tom? And you can go right to it. So if you read a lot of magazines. $16 a month, it seems like that would be a good deal. And it sure does make the iPad a great way to read. I can press plus or minus, and I can zoom in. I can't pinch. But it does seem to be this is dependent on the magazine publisher, how much effort they put into this, right?
Right.
Presumably, the platform gives you some more capabilities. I'd love to be able to zoom in. Can't. You know, tap an article. So it's not exact. It ain't exactly Flipboard, but it ain't bad either. And I guess it really is going to be valuable for somebody who reads a lot of magazines. And I'll tell you, if you're traveling, by the way, New Yorker is on here, but this is part of the higher end subscription, very much like the New Yorker app. So that's what's interesting about this. A lot of these companies already have their own app. Now, one of the nice things the New Yorker's done is they've got a link back to the website so you can read comments on it. They've got share links. Not all the magazines do that, but you could.
So this is
tweet it.
This is like Netflix for magazines.
It's Netflix for magazines.
Except more expensive.
Yeah, a lot more expensive. But if you read it, and again, so this would be totally useless if you didn't read a lot of magazines. On the other hand, if you read a lot of magazines, this is great.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, $10 for the monthlies.
I mean, it's great. It's amazing.
$15. And, you know, how much is a, you know, New Yorker subscription, even on the iPad, is not that much. Not $15 bucks a month. So it would only make sense if you would, you know, I wish they had The Economist.
It's the cable approach.
It is. It's a bundle. But I think the bid here is to be the newsstand. And what's interesting is none of these magazines are saying, well, we're just going to do an app or just going to be next issue. They're all looking at multi-platform.
The interesting thing here is you are getting a choice where you're getting a choice of I can buy – if I only want The Economist, I can buy The Economist. Or
exactly.
I don't think The Economist is on here.
It's not, alas. It seems mostly Condé and Time Life.
Right. But, I mean, Wired is definitely one of the ones that I – that I always read. So
you know, Time magazine's on here, not Newsweek, not The Economist, not U.S. News and World Report. Popular Mechanics is on here. People is on here. Parents, Money. Anyway, worth looking. It's free for 30 days. Make sure you cancel because they'll auto-charge your credit card. You do have to give them a credit card if you sign up for it. But you can go to nextissue.com, create an account, sign up, and you'll see the difference. If it's $15 a month if you want Entertainment Weekly, People, Sports Illustrated, New Yorker, and Time. Otherwise, the monthlies are only $10 a month.
My only problem is the number one reason I use a magazine is for the 10 minutes up and down on a flight.
Right.
Like, that's when I need it.
Right. I don't read a lot of magazines.
It's the only time I can't open my iPad is when I...
That taught me patience because I decided that I'm not going to spend... Why am I spending $5 just for out of fear that I'll spend 10 minutes inside my own head? And that it truly became a self-discipline thing that I had to do it.
No, you don't. I don't want to spend any time in my head.
That's low ceilings.
The last place I want to be. So I'm not a big magazine reader, but I know people who spend at least this much a month on magazines.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Easy. And for them, this would be probably a good choice. Mm-hmm. It's called Next Issue, free for 30 days, worth a try, I think. That is it for Mac Break Weekly for this week. I thank you all so much for being here. We do the show. It's somebody's birthday, isn't it? Do you want to light those?
Fortunately, they did not try to get my actual age. Otherwise, this would be a bonfire.
Are you 50 finally?
Yes.
No. No. You don't have to light those, Burke. I don't know if we have time for you to light those.
I don't know what my age is, actually. I think I'm...
it's a candleless birthday cake.
42, I think.
Happy birthday, Alex Lindsay.
Is there a Creative Commons birthday song we can sing?
Ooh, that looks really good.
Looks very
now,
tasty.
Now, if I spin it slowly and you just stare at the spiral, I think you will get hypnotized. I am getting sleepy. I will not eat carbohydrates.
Except for this.
Wait a minute. Wait. They put the candles in the Twitch shape.
Oh,
I just got that. Very nicely done, Burke McQuinn. Did Burke do that or Tony? Yeah. Nicely done. Look at that. Are you hypnotized? All right, have some cake. Happy birthday, Alex.
Thank you.
You can have that all to yourself.
See, it's easier to get my wish here, actually.
Andy will put a slice in the mail to you.
There you go. Please. I'll accept its cash equivalent.
We do this show each and every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, except that Leo can't really start, so whenever he kind of gears up. Why is that? That's so weird. I was sitting here. We sat here for 20 minutes. I just couldn't begin.
Because greetings are to be savored and partings are so sad.
I know. I don't want to say goodbye either, you notice. 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. Alex Lindsay from thepixelcore.com. Don't bother trying to hire them. They're very, very busy.
It's a little crazy.
So he's not going to be back. You're not going to be back for a while.
Well, I'm gonna try to. So next week I'm in Sydney. I'm leaving right now or in a couple hours for London, but I'll be in Sydney by next week, and I'm going to try to log in from there. So assuming I have a good hotel. I got a nice hotel just so I hopefully get a good bandwidth. And then I'll be back for the 24th.
Be nice to have you in studio, but we will be glad to talk to you in Sydney as
well. And then I'll be on the 24th. I'll be back.
And that's a big day because that's the day Apple's analyst call and perhaps announcement of Mountain Lion.
I think on the 31st, I'm in Tokyo. Konnichiwa.
Oh, man, it's amazing. Pixelcore.tv for the podcasts. Yes. And I want to make something very clear. You do a podcast called This Week in Photography.
Yes.
TWIP. We do a podcast called TWIT Photo. I understand it's confusing. We're putting TWIT Photo on hiatus.
Well, maybe even more confusing is we used to do TWIP at the TWIT office.
I know. You are still, Frederick Van Johnson, still doing
great
job. Photography.
Having great TWIP. People on, great conversations. So This Week in Photography, or TWIP, is still running.
And,
running
is the website?
It is.
Who knows? Just Google it. Yes. But that's not the same as Catherine Hall's TWIT Photo, just so you know. I'm confused, too. TWIP is not canceled.
Yeah, TWIP is, it's all good.
Frederick had to like tweet, I'm not canceled. I don't know what they're talking about. You're not canceled. Andy Inatko does a great podcast on the 5x5 network called Inatko's Almanac. Most weeks, he also joins us every week. You'll be here next week, yes.
I will be here next week. Good.
We got to do something about your bandwidth because he's very 8-bit. You're very 8-bit today.
Your video froze for some reason, and I don't know why.
That's just an 8-bit thing. What do you think, Chad? Is that us?
No.
That's him.
It's possible I'm simply unloved by God on this day.
Or Verizon,
which is much the same thing.
Did you see?
I can't believe you have Fios and you're getting that kind of bandwidth?
I don't know. My internet service has been a little bit weird for the past couple weeks.
But is it Fios?
And, it is Fios. Maybe I need to upgrade to the larger bandwidth
bit Fios, the 8-bit Fios.
Also, unfortunately, it's just like any office where the only way to keep it clean is to, like, once every 2 years, move everything out and then move things back in again. I'm at that stage with networking, which is I need to take apart my entire. I've been here for like 2 or 3 years. I've been adding or removing so many things. I need to remove every piece of networking hardware and rebuild my network from scratch.
And you need to put a switch in there and get it your own VLAN, and then you just have a VLAN that is just for MacBreak and then a VLAN for everything else.
Can you do me a favor before you move to Wisconsin? Or you can do it anytime. Netalyzer, Andy, if you run it for me and send us the report, Netalyzer. Netalyzer. And it will tell us a little bit more about what's going on there. That's a really useful thing. It's run by the University of California at Berkeley. And it's a little Java program that will analyze things like buffer bloat and all sorts of stuff. Netalyzer. If you Google it, you'll find it.
That's how we find issues with routers. We have a lot of router issues.
It's a really good way to find router issues, yeah.
Alex and I should get together. We'll do our hair, talk about boys, and then talk about network reuse.
Yes.
So, this VLAN thing. All right. Thank you, Andy Inatko. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work because break time is over.